Hey everyone, it's Rich. These days, the topic of cybersecurity is difficult to avoid. Every week, there seems to be a news story about a major breach. Just recently, AT&T discovered the personal information of more than 70 million current and former customers being sold on the dark web. And what's just as scary is that discovering a breach can take, well, quite a while. In fact, according to a 2023 IBM report, globally, it takes companies on average 204 days just to identify that a breach occurred in the first place. And working from home has not been helping. Based on research conducted by Zipdo, 91% of cybersecurity professionals reported an increase in cyber attacks due to remote working. Further supporting this dilemma, IBM found that the average total cost of a data breach was $173,074 higher when a remote workforce was a factor in causing the breach. And with the average cost of a data breach in the United States draining corporate coffers of around $10 million per incident, there's a great incentive to fortify a company's defenses. Yet even though companies are investing more money than ever to prevent cyber attacks, and given multiple studies putting the total value of the global cybersecurity market in the trillions of dollars, data breaches have never been higher. According to Statista, in 2023, there were 3,205 data compromises, a four-fold increase over 2015. So what's going on here? Well, our guest in this episode is going to shed some light on this matter. Elvis Moreland is a virtual chief information security officer at Blue Siren. With a decorated cybersecurity background, including companies like the U.S. Navy, the U.S. Department of Commerce, Northrop Grumman, the FAA, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and even the U.S. Supreme Court, Elvis is the perfect person to help us better understand the challenges facing today's corporate security environment. Enjoy the interview. You're listening to Privacy Files. This episode is brought to you by Anonymy Labs, makers of MySudo, the world's only all-in-one privacy app, and Sudo Platform, the cloud-based platform companies turn to for seamlessly integrating identity protection solutions into their software. And have you heard about the MySudo web browser extension? Breaking your online data trail just got way easier. To learn more, visit mysudo.com. That's mysudo.com. Elvis, welcome to Privacy Files.
Rich, thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. So let's jump right in. So you are a virtual chief information security officer at Blue Siren. What is a virtual chief information security officer?
Well, it's been called several different things, and some people might think of them as fractional CISOs. We're offering our professional services to companies that need us on a part-time or short-term basis. Most of us who have been in the industry long enough, who've been at a CISO level of other organizations, and I've worked with big and small, Fortune 500 and, you know, sole proprietorships as a CISO. And once you've learned the ropes and you've earned your stripes, you're a really good asset for the industry as a whole and for the middle market. And that's where we're focusing on right now. Is the middle market is so underserved in terms of cybersecurity and privacy protections that it's a big need out there in the market today.
So with fractional work, is the reason, I guess, that's driving that is because companies, you need to get them to a certain point, kind of you're more upstream, I guess, on the governance, risk, and compliance area to give them an overall strategy or plan, and then they go off and implement, and that's where maybe they need more of the full-time work? How does that exactly play out?
Well, I've got two types of customers. Customers who have spent some money on security tools and maybe security solutions and perhaps even security services. Those are very expensive capital expenditures. And what I do is I come in and other clients who haven't started anywhere at all, and they need someone to guide them. So either we have a frustrated client who has spent a lot of money on security solutions, And now they've figured out that, hey, we need someone to manage this, someone to set up the governance, the risk and compliance, not just the security tooling. They get frustrated at some point. They're like, okay, we need someone from the outside. And the second client is someone who's starting from scratch, who hasn't spent any money on security. And now suddenly, oh, wow, they realize this is something we need to address. Either they're in a growing segment or they have a growing client base. And now they're at a point where it becomes a necessity.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. And so I guess the message there is it's not good enough to have the tools. You have to know what to do with them and how all the pieces fit together and how you're going to respond to incidents and so forth.
Exactly. And honestly, I've come behind and picked up the pieces after they've spent millions of dollars on tools, or in some cases, let's say for a smaller player, $100, $150,000 on security tools, and realize, well, this doesn't really fix everything. I need someone to tell me what are the priorities. What should we be doing? Step one, step two, step three. And that's where I come in.
I get confused by some of these terms, and I know it depends on, you know, larger companies will have more defined roles maybe than a smaller company who individuals will wear multiple hats. But these distinctions between CISO and CIO and CSO and CTO, do you make distinctions between all of those? What kind of responsibilities do each of those roles have? How do they overlap? And I guess, does it change based on the size of an organization?
It does change over time and as maturity comes into play and size. So I will say it's a maturity level and a size driver in terms of what a CIO and CTO and what a chief security officer is. The chief information security officer is now expanding their duties into physical security and personnel security. So the title, even chief information security officer, is changing somewhat. So if you're a governance, risk, and compliance person like myself, you were very technical. You were in information security at one time and on the technical side. And now I become more of the management focus and I can understand what the business needs are. So I'm really now morphed into what's called a chief security officer. So just kind of make it more abbreviated, but more focused or having a wider focus on including physical security, personnel security, as well as cybersecurity.
And I guess what drew you into this career? It looks like you've got an extensive background, a lot of military experience and some very large companies. But what got you into this industry from the beginning?
Oh, yeah. From the beginning, it started with the military. So I joined the Air Force, active duty Air Force, right out of high school. I learned some programming, went to vocational technical school while in high school and learned COBOL and Fortran and BASIC and Visual Basic. And the Air Force picked me up and said, hey, you've got a very technical skill set or technical aptitude. We're going to put you over here in electronic warfare. And that was before PCs really became the hot thing. Right before Y2K, the turn of the century. And I started working in, you know, military circles and learning about what really, what we called cyber warfare, way before it was really a coined term here for the business world at large. And I learned a lot. Uncle Sam spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to teach me. So after 9/11, I was working in a more commercial aspect. So I left active duty after 9/11. I got called up to active duty. I stayed in reserves and had been in the reserves now for a couple of decades. And really, the business world came alive and they understood that now, hey, a lot of what we're doing is digital. Our processes are digital. Now we're outsourcing our services to the cloud. We're using SaaS, so software as a service. These businesses as a whole, and whether you're big or large, you're using a lot of technology today that's driving your business, enabling your business. So now, what are the threats that could impact your business? So after the military, Uncle Sam spent all that money for me to learn. I really turned those skills into what I do today in terms of offering value back to the business world in terms of cybersecurity.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Ugh, not again. I can't find it anywhere.
What's got you so frustrated?
Hi, Bob. Just trying to find an important email, but my inbox is a disaster. It's all ads and spam. It's exhausting.
Sounds like you need somewhat of an inbox intervention. Have you heard of MySudo?
MySudo? No, what's that?
It's an awesome app where you can create a pseudo. It's kind of like a digital alias. Each of these pseudos comes with its own email to help you organize your digital life. It's the perfect tool to keep your personal and work emails spam-free.
So what you're saying is I can use one of these pseudo emails and never have to worry about spamming up my personal or work email?
Yep. Plus, it's super secure. You should download it.
Downloading as we speak. You are a lifesaver.
Don't let spam emails take over your life. Reclaim your inbox with MySudo. Download MySudo today and start your journey to a clutter-free digital world. Visit MySudo.com and remember, stay private.
And I noticed at one point you were a contractor as an information security advisor at the U.S. Supreme Court. If you're able to tell us, what kind of problem were you trying to solve there?
So the Supreme Court, obviously is a large target. And they've got a very good approach to their cybersecurity, and they control their data very closely. So I helped them, kind of gave them some advice on what they could do to monitor their networks and build an information security incident response capability. So yeah, I was helping them build some of their capabilities, and it goes back to governance, risk, and compliance. Building your processes, building your systems, building your standards is all about that governance, risk, and compliance approach. And in this case, specifically, we're helping them build an incident response capability.
And I would imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but no two builds are probably identical. It depends on the situation of the company and what their different vulnerabilities or risks might be.
Right. So yeah, whether I'm talking to big business at a Fortune 500 company or a small manufacturing firm in North Carolina who's a defense contractor, or maybe even a small healthcare clinic owner I've talked to recently, and nonprofits, each environment is a little bit different. Now, we do have some standard approaches. There's truths that are known throughout the information security world and the privacy world. But yeah, when you get to the end of designing what those processes look like, they look a little bit different, and they're really customized for each client.
What are some of the most common vulnerabilities, I guess, you see when you take on a project? What is one thing that you just kind of like, you know, right away in your head, maybe even before you walk in, I know I'm going to see this one thing.
Yes. So over and over again, the number one issue I see over and over again is this: a struggle to identify their data and identify their assets, their IT assets. So you've got data assets and you've got hardline, technical assets. A lot of people spend money on gathering data or on assets, and they don't really track those over time. Somehow, some way, they think, well, it's automated. Someone else might track it, or it will take care of itself. But to be a good business leader in the current business landscape we have today is tracking your data, identifying that data first, and then tracking it, identifying your IT assets, and then maintaining awareness around those assets. Those are the top two fundamental and prominent issues I see every day.
If you would categorize the types of bad actors that are out there, obviously individuals, there could be organizations or kind of corporate bad actors. Have you ever had to deal with anything related to state actors?
Yes, I have. Some I can't dive into, but I will tell you this. There are two main threat actors out there, the bad actors that are going to come after you. One, they're more automated. They're opportunists. They're out to make a buck. And the second one that you'll have to face at some point will be state-sponsored actors. Those are a little bit more deliberate. They're very well-trained and they're very well-supported. So they've got a lot of resources at their disposal to go after you. Now, chances are a smaller organization, middle market or even smaller, they're going to be up against criminal enterprises. And that's really an opportunist. That's somebody who does an automated scan. They're using robots to scan whatever's open on the internet. And then they take an opportunity to, maybe launch an attack. They could try to steal information, or they could steal money, especially if you're a construction company. I'll give you an example. If you're a construction company and they get into your network and they find out what your email addresses are, they could say, okay, well, we're going to take this opportunity to send an email to the controller or the accountant we need a new payment over here. We need $50,000. We need wired to this account because we have to go pay for a project. I've seen that happen over and over again, but that's a crime of opportunity. That's a opportunist. And that's a really a, what we call a cyber criminal enterprise, and that they're in it to make money.
How do you deal with, because it sounds like in just the, some of the research I've done, most of these breaches or hacks, if you want to call them that, or they're not really necessarily some sophisticated high-end programmer who figures out some kind of a vulnerability, but typically lean on social engineering. How do you address social engineering when you're helping in a consulting situation, a company trying to establish this GRC framework? Is there either, like you said, they've either purchased the tools and now they're trying to figure out how to put everything together, or they're just starting from scratch. How do you train on social engineering?
Social engineering is a big problem because, you know, once they get into your network, then they can gather the information and start using social engineering against you. And one of the seven worst words I've heard, or a phrase that I've heard from business owners is, we've always done it this way. You're asking us to change the process. I know Betty over there, and she's been my accountant for 20 years, and we just have a more like a family feel to how we do our business. But Elvis, what you're doing is you're trying to tell me I need to use a process to cut checks, or I need to use a process that I've not used before. And that really is a huge problem. If you want to battle against social engineering, you have to have the right governance and risk management processes in place. It's not compliance. It's really governance and risk management. And that's all built on process. If you don't have your processes mature or even documented, social engineering is that one kryptonite that will get in the middle of your business and just wreck it. They will wreak havoc on your peace of mind as well as your bank account.
Yeah, I hear about social engineering so much. I get it individually, personally as well. People get burned on this, you know, every day. With all the experience that you have working on the cybersecurity side of it and working with companies and consulting and being full-time and part-time and project-based and so forth, you've obviously seen a wide array of implementations and problems and different approaches. When you think about personal safety and personal data privacy, has it changed your views about how you manage your own data based on what you've seen on the inside? Because we're always thinking here, you know, on the show of how do we educate people in a way to make them more proactive about protecting their own personal information before an actual event takes place?
Right. One of the best pieces of advice I've been able to share over the last, I don't know, 5-10 years or so, is you need to think about your privacy and your security as a safety feature. Would you drive a car or pickup without brakes, without seatbelts today, or even, well, without airbags? And security in the business world is another safety feature that if you approach it properly, if you practice good safety, just like OSHA safety processes, security can be a process for you that you can handle. You can manage it properly. You don't need to spend a lot of money on, but you can have a lot of peace of mind if you're practicing good safety practices and following good process. And security is nothing more than that. It is a good process to follow. If you think about it, or if you need someone to help you map out what the processes should look like, then definitely talk to somebody. But yeah, if I could give you one diamond in the rough and one word of wisdom, is think of security as a safety feature and not a technical problem.
That totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. When you set up GRC plans, is part of that also having companies go through, I don't know what you want to call them, fire drills or so forth, where they go through scenarios and then they actually have to practice, you know, how are we going to address this situation? Does it go that far, or is a lot of it just conceptual?
Once you establish a GRC program for an organization, it is the best practice to follow up and say, okay, this is what we've designed for you as a business, and we're going to walk you through it. You typically want to do a walkthrough exercise, and then you want to come back on an annual basis or maybe even semi-annual basis and do exercises that reinforce what you've established for them. So if you're looking at a mature practice, absolutely. You need to do a walkthrough initially. Okay, this is what we've done for you. We're going to walk you through it. This is what it looks like. And then we're going to reinforce it. We'll come back at, you know, at a later date. And we'll do a full tabletop, what we call tabletop exercise, and just reinforce what we've been able to establish for them. Now, we can also fine tune it for them based on business needs, but that's really the approach.
I guess similarly to, you know, like your military experience, I would imagine just it's a lots of training and it just becomes muscle memory at some point.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not really building muscle memory, if you think it's a set it and forget it, that's not safety. And that's certainly not how you would manage security for your business.
And speaking of the data breaches, we've had a couple of big ones lately. So I think AT&T was one, and then you had Change Healthcare, I guess, which is part of the United Health Group. So there was a couple of breaches there. Are you familiar with the stories and maybe what might have happened?
Yes. So in Change Healthcare, now you have big business buying another big business. And in many instances, you really don't know what kind of risks are involved. You could be buying a business that had been a little bit neglected on cybersecurity practices and safety features. And in this case, I think that's where we're at with United Healthcare and their purchase of Change Healthcare. They were in a process of influencing Change Healthcare's cybersecurity practices, and I think it was a little bit too late. And Change Healthcare got caught up in an attack, and then it affected so many millions of clients here in the United States. Same thing with AT&T. I think AT&T at some point might have had another third party or even a subsidiary who was attacked, and you know, 70 million records or client records had been exposed at some point. And now AT&T proper might not have known about that. And it happened with just that third party or the subsidiary outside of their purview. And then suddenly, most recently this week, there was a hacking group that claimed that they have 70 million records of AT&T clients. I think it's legit. And I also think it's very possible that that could happen under the radar when you have these huge conglomerates, these huge environments. You can't see everything. And if you don't have good standards, you can have a strong corporate presence, and then your subsidiary or line of business might be a little bit more weak in their practices.
So it sounds like a real risk is mergers and acquisitions in general.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There is not enough diligence in mergers and acquisitions today that should be there, because you are absorbing that risk into your environment if you're acquiring someone or merging with them.
So with all of this going on in the news, all these breaches, and we've had really no rhyme or reason, but for the last few episodes, we've done a lot of talk on cybersecurity. I would imagine the profession really is just, it's in such demand that it's just difficult to find the people to fill the roles. Because I think the last number I saw was there's something like a shortfall of about 3.5 million, I think, in the U.S. alone, job openings that just can't get filled in cyber.
I've seen so many different data points, but I would say in the United States, it's safe to say, or even conservative to say, that at least 500,000 open positions exist today that we can track that are advertised in the U.S. for cybersecurity positions. And those are all varying levels of experience and qualifications. Worldwide, I know it's definitely in the millions. So yeah, when you talk about a global marketplace, it's really a big issue. The World Economic Forum has talked about it over and over again. That is really a topic that I think is going to grow into a huge market driver going forward. I think competitive advantage is going to be built on our cybersecurity. If you're looking at IBM versus Dell, I think cybersecurity is going to come into place. We haven't been hacked, or we've adopted certain standards to protect your information. I think that's going to be a competitive driver, even if you compare one bank to another. In recent past, you've had banks that have experienced huge data breaches. And are you really willing to go back and give your money to that type of bank when you know that you've got a bank just down the street that they haven't been affected by a data breach, or they might have, they've touted that they practice a certain, you know, security standard and follow security procedures?
Is most of this demand, are you seeing it on the governance side, or is it a mix?
There's a mix. I think there's a market voice out there that is being driven by vendors. And that market voice, I think, adds a lot of noise to the conversation. But at the end of the day, if you can't manage your technical assets and your data assets, then your governance, risk, and compliance practices are probably pretty weak. And you need to really look at that. If I were to advise a brand new CEO today, I'd say, look, if you're going to talk to a security professional, talk to them about governance, risk, and compliance first, set up my processes, and then based on what we find to be my needs, then let's look at technical solutions. Don't run off and buy a tool and think it's going to be a silver bullet. It just doesn't work that way. You just don't know what your needs are yet.
Let's take a quick break for this message from our sponsor.
Picture this. You are a key decision maker at your credit union. Your tellers are tired of the lengthy KYC process, fraud is a constant worry, and onboarding new members feels like a marathon. But what if there was a way to streamline it all? Enter the Sudo platform. Our reusable credential technology transforms the traditional KYC process, reduces fraud, strengthens communication security, and streamlines member onboarding. With Sudo Platform, you can prevent fraud, save time, and create secure digital identities. And the best part? It's built right into your credit union's app. This is more than innovation. It's a commitment to providing your members a rewarding experience. We're live and ready to redefine how you do business. Don't wait. Give your credit union the upgrade it deserves. Identify any member in any channel at any time, all while improving convenience and reducing fraud. To learn more, contact us at sudoplatform.com. That's sudoplatform.com.
Where do you think the cybersecurity profession is heading right now? What does the future look like? AI, of course, is impacting pretty much every industry today. Do you see that becoming a bigger part of it? And, you know, is the growth in the profession in terms of jobs, will that continue for the foreseeable future?
I think you're going to see a very technology-specific driver like AI is going to come into play. And you need someone to bridge the gap between business and technology. You're going to always have technologists because they like to sit in the back room, like I like to say, or the data center. They like to sit in the back room and not talk to anyone, but you know, they're typing on the keyboard and they're interacting with program and code. That's the type of person that you want back there talking to other technologists about what's innovative. You need someone in the middle. You need someone to bridge the gap between business and that technologist. And really, security today, at my level, as a chief information security officer or chief security officer, you need to bridge the gap. You need to be able to speak to the business about what the priorities are. And you also need to translate to the technologists, hey, this is a new initiative. This is what we need to think about to help the business get where it needs to go.
How is your experience in cyber going all the way back to the beginning of your career? How has that changed the way you manage your own personal information? And as you say, really, it's about safety. I'm sure that's had a big impact on your day-to-day life.
Oh, absolutely. I don't share my personal information. There was a time where I had a Facebook account. I had other social media accounts and I deleted them because if people want to know me, then they can look at my professional profile. They can reach out like you did, Rich, and we can have a conversation and we can have a really kind of a casual approach to getting to know one another. Then I can let you know what my personal information is once I know who you are. But yeah, most recently there was a company in Hong Kong that they were social engineered because they gathered enough personal information about who was in charge and who had authority in that company. They actually set up a video interview or video meeting with this person and got them to release millions of dollars just because these people allowed their personal information to be consumed on the internet. And so you need to think about, am I giving too much information out? Can I limit that information share to just friends and family? You can do that. But yeah, now we need to think about, do we want to put all of our personal information out there for everyone on the internet, both good and bad actors, to look at and to consume?
Yeah, the whole OSINT, open source intelligence thing. It's like people are shocked when they see, when somebody kind of goes through, sometimes you'll see videos of this on YouTube and as somebody who's an expert in this field will kind of do an audit of your digital footprint, and then they show them the report of like, look at all this stuff that I learned about you, and people are shocked. They're like, I had no idea, but every little thing you do, it's building a profile on you over time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, you have no idea how much information is being shared about you beyond just social media. So there are state and local groups that talk to the county and the city, and they pull information out about you. And that information can be shared if you're not watching it. So I have a personal service that monitors my PII, and we found that my voting information was shared. I mean, you would think your voting information would be confidential, right?
Sure.
But yeah, they had my name and they had my party affiliation, but they had a lot of filler information that they filled in about my preferences. And that was fake. That was fake information. But someone else could pick that up and use that in a conversation or even use it against me. And I'm like, no, wait a minute, that's not accurate. I don't know where you got that information. So even though your information is held by city and county governments, some of it can be made up once it is purchased and then leaked on the internet. They can leak all kinds of information about you that's not correct.
Yeah, I think last year it was a few of the major tax software companies were caught sharing very sensitive personal financial information using the Metapixel. The very big tech surveillance company, Meta, Facebook, was involved again. Right. So
Meta had that problem with Cambridge. And they gathered all the information from the Facebook users. So yeah, you have no idea what the data aggregators are doing with that information. They can take a little bit of it, and it might be half truth. And then they add their own flavor of data and your preferences to go along with it. You have no idea what their end goals are.
Yeah, we talk to a lot of people who they care about their privacy. They just want to know where to start. They don't want to be overwhelmed either. I mean, what would be one recommendation? What's one thing somebody can do if they're just like, gosh, Elvis, just tell me one thing I can do to just get myself on that road to becoming more private and protective of my personal information?
Yeah, start looking at privacy notices. That's first. If you're giving a company full rights to your private information, that's probably not the best way to go. And then separate. So first, take a look at the privacy notices and follow what those mean and understand what those mean and make good decisions about sharing that information. And the second is separate your professional and your private information, your family information. Your personal information doesn't need to be shared to the world. It really doesn't. There's too many bad actors consuming that information, and they can use that against you at some point. So I would separate your personal information from your professional information and put a professional image together, of course, and maintain it. And then your friends and family, they have access to your personal information. That's where the social benefit comes into play. You can really share your thoughts, your feelings to your friends and family in a very closed environment and not exposed to the entire world.
Cool. Yeah. And so it's Blue Siren, blue and then siren spelled CYREN.com.
That's right.
Anything else you wanted to cover or touch on before we wrap up?
Yeah, I just want to emphasize, I mean, your listeners, if they think about security as a technical problem, they're already defeated, because security is really just a practice of safety. And you as an individual, or you as a business leader, if you have good safety, you get in the car, you put on your seatbelt, you use a car with brakes, good operating brakes. That's really what you're doing. You're using the right safety features in security to protect you. So think of it that way. Are we using the right safety features that we need, or is there a gap that we need to fill going forward? Don't let technology drive everything. It's going to build an amount of fear. And obviously, business leaders think about, well, I'm not technical enough. I need to go get someone to tell me what to think and what to do. Well, in this case, my recommendations are, use good common sense and think of security as a safety feature.
Yeah, we like to think of the analogy of walking the front door at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And most people do, right. But now with smart devices, there's always a way to get into your network inside your house anyway. So
yeah, exactly. Especially if you get those electronic locks. And there's a reason why I don't have electronic locks on my house.
Exactly. Well, it sounds like with the way things are going today, you're going to have some strong job security for the foreseeable future. So,
yeah, at least for the next decade. I could think that things are not going to change until we start really educating people that, hey, this is not a technical issue. You don't need to be a code jockey to understand security. You just need to understand what's the good safety features to use.
Well, awesome. I appreciate your time. This has been great, Elvis, and keep up the great work. We definitely need more out there like you helping fight this front, because it's growing. It's not going away anytime soon.
It's not, unfortunately, Rich. But yeah, thank you for having me on today.
Yeah, and again, that's bluesiren.com, the color blue, and then spelled CYREN.com. Elvis, thanks so much.
Thank you, Rich.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Privacy Files. If you would like to be on the show, or you know someone who would be a good fit, head on over to privacyfiles.com and submit a guest request. Also, if you're enjoying the content we're cranking out, please consider giving us a 5-star rating in your favorite podcast player. It does make a difference. In our next episode, we'll be talking to the founder and CEO of a nonprofit research project that is building free open source software with data privacy and autonomy at its core. Until next time, don't forget, privacy is a human right.